This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 12.
Hello, welcome to Marathon Training Academy, found online at marathontrainingacademy.com. I'm Trevor.
This is Angie.
And we are here to empower you to run a marathon and change your life. In this episode, we chat with Sheldon Spencer, the man who has had the greatest influence on Angie and I to think positively and live an active life. Looking for a new challenge, he ran his first marathon at age 55 and has been addicted to running ever since. And in the quick tip segment, Angie will tell you what to look for in choosing a good marathon or half marathon training plan. Well, I am totally stoked because today I reached a milestone.
Yes, you did.
I ran the furthest that I've ever run.
By far.
Yeah, now some of you know that I'm not an experienced runner like Angie is, and I did not like to run until I met her, but we both ran a 12K race today in Port Townsend, Washington, and it was a lot of fun.
It was. It's beautiful here just to start out with, being here on the Olympic Peninsula, just gorgeous weather.
We're on vacation.
Gorgeous view, getting out to look out the ocean, the mountains. It was just the perfect day for running.
Oh, yeah. Actually, we're podcasting right now from a deck of my parents' cabin that is overlooking the Puget Sound. So we can see the ocean, we can see the tall trees. The sun is shining, and it's just peaceful. The kids are taking a nap.
Life is good.
Yeah, had some salmon last night for dinner, and having a great vacation. You know, I just recommend everybody take a vacation once in a while.
That's right, and go somewhere peaceful that you enjoy, and be physically active while you're on vacation, too. It'll make it so much better.
Yeah, I feel like you accomplished something. I feel great after running that 12K today. It was the Port Townsend Roadie Race. Roadie, short for rhododendron.
Yeah.
And the course was beautiful, and there was about, how many people there, you say?
There was over 2,000. I don't know the exact count, but it was a pretty good number.
I had no idea how much fun a race could be. I've always ran by myself out in the neighborhood, but there was so much energy and excitement. I can see why Angie loves it so much. Just standing, you know, in the corrals waiting for the race to start, and then even when the race began, we had to climb a hill, but there was people cheering us out there along the sides, and there were old people, young people, people pushing baby strollers, running this race. My dad was running with us, and it was just a great experience. And the day was so beautiful, you just couldn't ask for better weather.
Yeah, it was, you know, for those of you who have never done a race, who or maybe are new to running, or think, you know, I don't really look like a runner, I would never fit in, you just need to do a race, because you'll see people out there who can hardly walk, it looks like, they're going to be doing the race. People who were large and skinny and old and young, and, you know, you will fit in, and be proud of the fact that you're a runner, even if you are a beginner. So you really never know what's inside of a person from just looking at him. Like I was telling Trevor today, is that not everyone who looks fast is fast, and not everyone who looks slow is slow.
Right.
Some people just have what it takes deep down, but the outward appearance doesn't really match that. So it all comes down to what's inside of you and what you can push yourself to do and accomplish.
So you've been in touch with some of our listeners, and would like to give some shout outs here.
Yes, these are people that have been listening to our podcast and have connected with me on Facebook. The first is Miguel. He's from Mexico, and he's 40 years old. And I thought his running story was really neat because he started running just 4 years ago, and he found it was a good way to stop smoking. He was able to lose 20 pounds, and he says he feels better now in his 40s than he did when he was in his 20s.
Wow.
So running can really bring new life back to your body.
Yes.
And he has run 3 half marathons, and his goal is to run a full marathon before his 42nd birthday. So we'd like to wish him continued success in his training and in his health.
Yeah, keep up the good work.
The second person would be Christine. She's from Kansas, and she and her husband have started an organization to raise funds and awareness for the prevention of child abuse. And they are currently training for the Dallas White Rock Marathon in December. And I'd encourage you to check out their website. It is milesforkids.org. And I just think they're doing a really neat thing, bringing a focus to a very important subject. So that's Miles, M-I-L-E-S, the number 4, kids, K-I-D-S.org. The third person is Alan. He's from Maryland, and he was able to shed about 65 pounds and discovered running and just fell in love with it. And I like what he said, that he didn't lose 65 pounds because that implies that he is looking for it again, but he was able to shed it through hard work, I'm sure. And recently he ran the Baltimore and Annapolis Marathon in 3 hours and 43 minutes. So that was awesome, and we'd just like to say keep up the good work, Alan.
Yeah, congratulations to all of you. And we just like to encourage everybody who is changing their life and making themselves healthier. Just keep it up. Well on my way, well on my way, well on my way. Well on my way, well on my way, well on my way. Well, today we have a special guest on our podcast. His name is Sheldon Spencer. He's a fitness lover. He's gone on 200-mile hikes, 60-mile bike rides. He's also ran 3 marathons, and this man has been a big inspiration to both Angie and I. And not only that, but he's my dad.
That's right.
Sheldon is from California. He's semi-retired, and we're actually out on vacation right now in Washington doing this podcast. And I appreciate him letting us practice our interview skills, since this is our first interview here on the podcast. Let me mention also that he's 58 and kind of got into running later in life. But I think his story will be a big inspiration to all of you that care about running marathons, training for marathons, and living a healthy lifestyle. Okay, Dad, so the first question is, we want you to tell us about your journey to becoming a marathoner and basically what made you want to run a marathon.
Well, thank you, Trevor. It's great to be part of this, and it's fun to talk about something that really matters to me. I think I became a marathoner by chance, really. I kind of just eased my way into it. Mm-hmm. I've always enjoyed being active, enjoyed walks and hikes and cycling, and I just kind of felt like challenging myself a little bit. I'd see other people run, and I thought, I can do that. Well, right. I found out I couldn't necessarily do that. It's not too easy at first. So
that's right.
I set kind of little goals, and you know, my little goals became bigger goals.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to start.
Yeah, I remember growing up, you were always active, but never really a runner. So I guess you started as a walker at first and just decided this is getting boring.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Okay. And it, you know, there's just a certain satisfaction when you achieve some goals. And, you know, I think my goals have always been moderate, but, you know, hey, can I run 5 miles? You know, eventually I worked my way up to that. Mm-hmm. Maybe I can do 6 and then 7 and then 8. And then I started kind of reading about marathons and talking to other people about them and kind of began to just daydream about the concept, and then you know, the daydream kind of grew.
Did you say that you had a friend that did marathons?
Yes, and I always kind of envied my friends that had that level of fitness and could complete marathons and triathlons.
And they were your contemporaries as far as age and everything, so it seemed doable to you.
Well, you know, yes, I guess it seemed doable. Wasn't too sure at many points along the way.
Well, all right, we're going to get into that, maybe some of the fears and uncertainties you had and how you worked past them, because I think in our audience, there's probably a lot of people who have not run a marathon yet or maybe even done a half marathon or anything big, so they're working through some of these beginning apprehensions. So our next question is,
what mistakes did you make along the way in your training?
Well, I think I made lots of mistakes. When I ran my first marathon, I hadn't really done much reading or really talked to many people. Certainly hadn't gone on to Marathon Training Academy because it didn't exist at the time. So I just went out and kind of plodded along and ran. And I don't think I developed enough base miles, enough base level of training. Didn't really take the time for cross training, that's for sure. And sure enough, I had some injuries that I just sort of thought, well, I'll just run through those injuries and that didn't really work too well. So the first marathon I completed, but it wasn't without some level of discomfort.
Yeah, or some of the injuries that you faced.
Well, you talking about the right leg or the left leg?
Should we start with the body systems analysis?
I was beginning to get kind of a shin splint late in the training, getting close to the marathon. And at that point, I kind of wanted to participate anyhow. Mm-hmm. So I did. So I had, you know, one leg that kind of had some shin discomfort. And then the other leg, I think probably because I was favoring it, I had some knee discomfort. So I finished that marathon, 5 hours and 16 minutes. So I didn't exactly whiz through it. And basically, I'd do some running and then walking and then running and then walking. And
well, that's a good strategy, though. Yeah. I mean, even if you are not feeling 100% to do that run-walk strategy and whatever it works to get you across the finish line, I think, especially for that first experience, it's not like you're trying to set any land speed records. You know, it's just completing the distance, and then you learn a lot from there.
So did you, your times get better after you ran the next two?
Yes. So the next one, my goals have always been very moderate, and my competition is with myself. So
right.
That's one part I really like about it. My goal was just to get under five hours. So, step one, I picked a real flat course.
Which one did you do the second time?
That was the CIM California International Marathon in Sacramento, which is a really nice run. And I spent more time with stretching, cross training. I was better prepared for that one. So you know, I met my little modest goal. And
good. And that's what it's about. It's, you know, you're not racing to win. You're racing against yourself, pretty much. And, you know, I think it's kind of funny whenever people who are not marathoners will ask me, so are you going to win? And that's kind of an ignorant question, I guess, maybe probably a common one.
You have to be able to run like 5-minute miles or 4-minute miles to win, since some of those really fast guys out there.
Right. And they kind of look at you like, well, what's the point of, you know, going through all that and running if you're not going to win the thing? But
mm-hmm. Well, it's like you said, Angie, that everybody that runs a marathon is a winner.
Exactly. Just the process of training and making yourself finish, it really stretches you and challenges you as a person. So
Dad, how old were you when you ran your first marathon?
Oh, I guess I was 55 years old.
Okay.
You know, and that's one thing I really like about running is that there's every age and body type out there. So, you know, you're not alone no matter what your self-identity is, I guess.
Yeah, you're not going to feel out of place out there, no matter what race you sign up for.
Right.
Even that 12K that we talked about earlier, you know, there was just every variety out there.
Yeah, there were like 9-year-old kids, dads pushing strollers, old guys that looked like they were in their 70s. And some of these guys were way out ahead of me, so I enjoyed it. Okay, the next question is, how did you stay motivated to finish your training and get across the finish line?
I think the number one motivator to me was paying for the run and telling people I was going to do it.
Right.
Because I was just, at that point, you're in pretty deep, you know?
Yes.
You know, you're not, if you don't complete your training and participate, you're failing yourself. But, you know, the people you've talked to about it, and, you know, they're going to know too. So that's a motivator, honestly.
It is, yeah. That's about setting goals for anything. It definitely helps to tell people and have a monetary investment in it because, yeah, it hurts more to lose that money. And people have already asked if you're crazy to be doing a marathon in the first place, so better make sure that they know you are.
Yeah.
What did you learn about yourself during the training process?
I think the number one thing, which I think is very critical, is that you have to learn that you can push through discomfort. And mm-hmm. I think that's true with a long hike, a long run, a long bike ride, and lots of things in life. It's kind of a metaphor for life. But if you can push through that part of the running that really, you know, it isn't joyful the whole time.
No.
You know, the cumulative effect is wonderful, but parts of it are not so wonderful.
And right.
When I realized, hey, I can actually make myself run 3 miles,
exactly.
You know, then, hey, I can do it. Even though at mile 1.5, I was hating life. I mean, you know, that same process kind of continues as you go for longer and longer distances.
Right. It's like building mental discipline and realizing your body can do a lot more than you thought it could previously. Learning to tap into that potential that's there, but a lot of times we don't make ourselves do the hard thing. It's easy to take the easy out, I guess.
Would you say it was the hardest physical thing that you've ever done?
Yes.
Which race do you think was the hardest? Was it the first one?
Yeah, the first one, just because of my training errors, really. So
Right, and yeah. Maybe not knowing what to expect exactly.
Yeah, you're so nervous the first time. You're not nearly as nervous after the first one.
Exactly. So, yeah. You kind of have these contingencies in your mind. Well, if this happens, then I'm going to do this, and you have some strategies to put in place. But
right.
Yeah, that first one, it's definitely groundbreaking.
Now, Dad, we were talking about one of your mistakes that you made. I'll forget which marathon. Maybe you're the last one you ran, but I think it'd be good for you to talk about the problem that you had with your foot.
Sure. The fourth marathon, which I didn't participate in because I had an injury that I just couldn't overcome, I kind of put off replacing my shoes. And I was waiting for a store to get in the new model. And I was too lazy to go shop around or go online and replace my shoes. And I just ran longer and longer in the same old worn out pair of shoes. And I just got kind of a bad bruise on the side of my foot. And it honestly took months to go away. And I had to kind of lay off the running for a while. So,
I think that's a common mistake. You know, you think, oh, I could just squeeze a few more miles out of these things. You know, they still look pretty good. And you want to save the money because, in all honesty, most running shoes are not cheap. So
right.
I had that tendency, too, just to try to get a few more miles out of them. But it's really not wise to go over that 500-mile mark. And for some people who are more injury-prone, they shouldn't go over 400 miles in their shoes.
So here's how you have to justify it to yourself. If you took up golf and joined a country club, that cost you about $10,000 plus several $100 a month. Plus,
right.
Each club is about the price of a pair of running shoes. So
right.
If you buy two or three pair of running shoes a year, you know, it's for something that you care about and is making a difference in your life. Not so bad.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. It really is not that expensive of a sport. I mean, you can make it expensive if you have to get all the latest high-tech gear. But with the basics, you know, some good running clothes, some good shoes, a race now and then, it doesn't have to be that expensive. And just the health benefits that you get really make the cost worth it in the end, to me.
Sure. Seems like those foot injuries take so long to heal, don't they? I've rolled my ankle a couple times playing basketball, and several months is just still just uncomfortable.
Well, it's hard to get around without using your feet, so you tend to overdo it maybe, and yeah, it definitely does.
So had you already paid for your fourth race?
Yes, I had.
Ouch.
You know, you just have to accept the things that happen in life. And, you know, I'm back running now and, everything's working really well. And it hasn't been that many months.
Mm-hmm.
So I just had to lay off for a little while and then till my foot totally healed. And now I'm back in the saddle again.
You feel like you're addicted to running? Like if you go without running for a couple of days, you just long to get out there and do it?
Yeah, because of the peace of mind and mental health aspect of it. To me, it really clears my mind and puts me in a good state of mind. So.
What's the best time of day you found to run?
Well, I do better in the morning. Just to people have routines and
after your coffee, right?
Definitely after my coffee. Yeah. So, this is a nice way to start the day for me.
Yeah, you're definitely an early bird. I was telling him earlier, I think he gets more accomplished before 9 a.m. than the rest of us do all day.
Yeah, I hope I'm in as good a health as you are, Dad, when I get to be your age. Okay, and then the last question is, has running a marathon changed your life in any way?
You know, one thing I've thought about regarding this question is the issue of diet. I think training has definitely influenced what I eat.
Hmm.
You know, I don't go overboard on trying to just have a strict diet, but you do think about now, do I really want to eat this greasy food and fries or do I want to eat something that's going to stay with me and give me the power that I need to get my runs in. So, and then a couple more things. The single biggest thing to me is just state of mind and just how you feel. It's really cathartic to go out and take a nice run. Hmm. Then the third thing I thought about is, it takes time to train and time to run, time out of your day. And you just have to stop and think, because you're alert and you feel good and you feel organized and you feel motivated, you're probably going to accomplish your goals in a more timely fashion, even though you've carved out an hour and a half or whatever it takes to do your fitness.
That's a good point, because I hear a lot of people saying, I don't have time to exercise. And it does take time. But I think that if you get up and get that exercise in, you're, like you said, you're more alert, you're more focused on your tasks, and you probably have more energy to last longer throughout the day. And you're usually less likely to be hitting the donuts by 10 a.m. too, if you've gotten that boost of energy in you. So,
yeah, you think it would work the opposite if you go out and exercise vigorously, that you're going to be tired the rest of the day. But for me, I have more energy and I'm less sluggish and I can get up and go if I exercise in the morning. So there's like an immediate payoff for exercising, and there's a long-term payoff, of course, looking at your overall long-term health and well-being.
Right. And if you can't run in the morning, even if you have to run on your lunch hour or after work, you know, you may kind of feel in an energy slump then. But I think if you get out there and force yourself to do it, you're going to feel so much better afterwards. I mean, not only will it burn off some of the stress of the day, it's just going to prepare you to be able to relax the rest of the evening, I think. Mm-hmm. So I know it's hard for me if I don't get it done in the morning to make myself get out there later in the day. But, you know, you never regret it when you're done. So just making yourself get out there is probably at least 75% of the
battle.
Yeah, the battle, that's for sure.
I've always had a gauge as far as how hard to train that I want to feel better when I finish. And if I feel worse than I finish, then I've trained too hard.
So. And that's a good point, Sheldon, that you made, that sometimes, especially for your long runs, you may want to try to do it on a day that you don't have a lot of demanding responsibilities. You don't want to have to be on your feet the rest of the day or be cleaning out the garage or standing at your kid's soccer game for the rest of the afternoon, something like that. You want to be able to maybe put your feet up a little bit and have a chance to soak in a cool bathtub or whatever it takes to get your legs feeling better. And that's why a lot of people do them on the weekends. But if you have to work the weekend, pick a weekday and try to make it someday that you have a few less responsibilities so you're not going to totally burn yourself to the ground.
Okay, we also want to ask you a question about gear because we have a lot of people in our audience who ask us about what kind of gear we use, and we go pretty cheap. Angie's a plain Jane when it comes to running usually and ran her first marathon. We didn't even have a gym membership. So I know, Dad, that maybe you have found you owned a sporting goods store for a while. So what can you tell us about gear?
Well, you know, I think this probably the single most important thing is find out what works for you and don't change it a few days before the marathon or the run the race that you've signed up for.
Good
point. There aren't that many right and wrongs. I personally like to pack my own liquid because I think it's a pain to drink out of those paper cups. You can't, you know, they're splashing all over the place. And
what kind of hydration system do you use?
I use a pint bottle that fits in a little holster at an angle. It sloshes a little bit, but the trade-off to me is the little ones where you have four or six little tiny ones around your waist are kind of tedious. The pint one's so easy to get, and by wearing a waist belt, it gives me a place to put my keys and in my ID. And then also if I have a light layer that I want to get rid of, I can kind of hang it from my belt too.
And you kind of wear that in the back as kind of like a back fanny pack type thing?
Yeah, exactly right, yeah. So.
Yeah, that would be a good system because we do have a lot of people asking me about what hydration systems I recommend. And I usually use a handheld bottle, but it is good to know what other people's preferences are. And you made a good point that whatever you like and get used to is what you should maintain and do for your race. That's what your long run should be for, is to get all the kinks out and practice everything possible, whether it's drinking or eating, your apparel, things like that.
All right, Dad. Well, I thank you for coming on the podcast and letting us ask you some questions about your marathons. And thank you for being such an inspiration to Angie and I to live healthy and enjoy life.
That's right.
Thanks for all the good food here in Washington.
Thanks for letting us crash at your cabin.
Thanks. It's been great fun.
Okay, and the quick tip today, Angie's going to tell you about how to find and choose a good training plan for a full marathon or half marathon. So what do they look for in a good training plan?
Well, there are dozens of programs out there available. And I'd really encourage you, especially if you're a beginner, to find a program that's based on 3 to 4 running days per week so that you're able to incorporate focused cross training and at least one rest day per week. When I was training for my first marathon, I just, you know, downloaded a free plan off the internet, and it had me running 5 to 6 days per week, and I just found that it was too much for my body, especially as a beginner, and I was experiencing injuries and fatigue, and it really wasn't ideal for me. So I found that this 3 to 4 day per week running schedule gives you time to cross train, to strengthen other areas of your body, to get that rest day in so that you don't experience nagging injuries, and that you can cross the finish line healthy and happy with your performance.
All right, so just one more question. Where can they find an awesome training plan?
Well, I hope that's not overstating it, but we did put some free training plans on marathontrainingacademy.com. We have a beginner and an intermediate program for both the half and full marathons, so I'd encourage you to check that out. It may just be what you're looking for.
And those training plans are easy to download. They're in PDF format. So you can head over to our website and find them there. And also, while you're on our site, check out the 7 Pillars of Successful Marathon Training. It's a free audio recording that we've put there for you to get. This will give you a solid overview of running and marathon training so that you can be healthy and happily on your way to running a marathon and changing your life.
Well on my way, well on my way, well on my way. Well on my way.